am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest. Almost forgot my name this week, guys. Here with my colleague, friend, business partner, and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, Mr. Nick Hodge. This is the 324th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets, big, beautiful bills, what we're investing in, what I think is going to end up being a pretty lucrative private placement opportunity for those amongst you that are accredited investors. We'll talk gold, copper, platinum, palladium, the usual. But as always, Mr. Hodge, first and foremost, how goes you, Mr. Future City Councilman?
Oh, I don't know about that. There's a whole suitcase worth of luggage that comes with being a politician, but I do enjoy, you know, poking the hive every now and then, and I'm an outsider at my core, as you know, Gerardo. So I'm doing great. I hope the same for you and the fam. It sounds like you got some in town for the Independence Day holiday, which is one of my favorites, actually. So we're having a pool party as well. Very much looking forward to it. Looking forward to the private placement you mentioned. Looking forward to the Rick Rule Natural Resource Symposium next week in Boca Raton, where I will be. And looking forward to this podcast. How are you?
No, I'm great. I'm healthy. Excited to have family in town. Excited to spend, you know, a few extra days of the week with them in person. Looking forward to all the amazing food that my tías and my tíos and my primas and my wife all, you know, come through and cook my mom. So no, it's good. The kids are excited, excited for the fireworks, excited for the pool parties as well. And look, let's dive right into it. I got my supply and demand sweater on very intentionally this week because the supply of dollars is going to accelerate now. And demand, I think, will find a moment where it'll become less. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we're seeing the dollar down at the 97 level, the dollar in the index, and looking like it wants to breach that and head lower. I can get on a rant really quick, and I don't want to lead with that this week. So I would love to get your thoughts on this bill, at least the core part of it. I don't want to get into all of the details because it is big, right? But there's some very important math that comes with it that I think is going to be very consequential, by default, very good for us. But you wrote a beautiful piece on this that I read earlier about supply and demand of dollars and, you know, profiting from that. So I'd love your take.
Yeah, I was going to share a chart of the dollar, but just imagine something going down and to the right for the past 6-7 months from 110 to 97, as you said. We're getting a big, beautiful bill, and it's coming with ugly debt load is I think is something similar to what I wrote, going to increase the debt by some $3 to $5 trillion because we're extending the Trump tax cuts from 2027 and given a pretty generous state and local tax deduction, otherwise known as SALT, which was a sticky negotiating point that I was talking to you about several weeks ago, Gerardo. So it made it through literally by the skin of its teeth. J.D. Vance had to cast the tie-breaking vote in the Senate, as the vice president would do. And deals are being wheeled in Congress as well, so Mr. Trump can sign it on his day of choice, which is July 4th. I'd be remiss if I didn't remind you that this gentleman loves signing bills that are going to cause inflation, that are going to increase the debt, despite what comes out of his mouth. I've said it 100 times, and I will never forget that he wanted his name printed on the COVID checks that kicked this whole bullshit off. So that's your reminder. Doge also failed, by the way. But this is what they want. So they want a lower dollar, and they're working to get it. Whether intentionally or not, through the outcome of this bill and other things I've told you about recently with the Fed. So your supply and demand sweatshirt is perfect because it increases the dollars that you need to pay for all this shit. Because what does the U.S. do to pay for all this stuff? They print the dollars. So if you were to put in your Google search bar M2 money supply and click the first link that comes up, which is the Fred chart, from St. Louis, you'll see that it is now at all-time highs. What happens when that happens? Well, dollar correlated assets that go up when the money supply go up, i.e. cryptocurrencies, primarily Bitcoin and Ethereum. The other thing that happens and is happening contemporaneously with softer demand for the dollar, which is the black word on your sweatshirt, as we know there has been, e.g. from China de-dollarizing and the ascent of central banks holding more gold on their balance sheet, and the Basel rules that we've talked about recently that allow different levels of, and the Fed also had a ruling recently, sure, that allowed different levels of capital requirements for banks that may or may not allow them to hold whatever, more cash or more treasuries. So if demand goes down and supply goes up, the value of the thing in question, in this case, the dollar, goes down, and then by extension, all the things that are priced in those dollars cost more, i.e., popcorn at the Regal Cinemas. I just read that this summer they're going to debut an $89 bucket of popcorn. It's going to come in a theme bucket based on the movie that you're watching, so that'll be fun. And then
$89 popcorn.
Yeah. And then other things go up. I'll be quiet in 1 second, but we've been talking about platinum. I think we'll talk about it again. Copper's near an all-time high. Silver's been moving. And then I start to see the articles again that always blame it on something. These are always my favorite when inflation starts to go back up, like the olive oil price is surging. It's because of weather in Greece. It's like, no, it's just inflation, man. And then it's like the price of pistachios is surging because of a meme about some pistachio chocolate bar in Dubai. And it's like, no, it's just inflation, man. Like, just try to understand the world in simple terms and you'll be much, much better off. And then last week you said you need to be an asset owner. And that's very much true because those assets, price in those dollars are going up.
And which assets are important, right? And I think this is the part where, look, both sides, both political parties have done a, I'm being sarcastic, a brilliant job of running up the debt and not balancing budgets and continuing to spend wastefully as they cut backroom deals. And clearly there's no interest. So Ray Dalio made a trip to Washington, D.C. I believe it was last week. And he came back and I was watching an interview and he said, I spoke to people on both sides and I spoke to them as a businessman. And I presented my mathematical argument about why, yes, we do have to cut some social entitlement programs, but we cannot continue to make tax cuts for billionaires permanent and then do the old switcheroo where they say, well, we're not going to tax tips. Well, yeah, you're not going to tax tips, but in 3 years, that goes away. The billionaire cuts don't go away, right? And that's the way the game is played right now. And so he had a great interview where he talked about that at the end of those meetings with people from both sides of the aisle, the conclusion he came away with is that neither side is serious about cutting the debt, right? Because it's obvious. And so here is his math.
How insightful.
Imagine that. Now, to his defense, he followed that with this post, and this part is insightful because it's just factual and it's mathematics, right? He says, now that the budget bill has passed Congress, we can see what the projections look like for deficits, government debt, and debt service expenses. In brief, the bill is expected to lead to spending of about $7 trillion a year with inflows of about $5 trillion a year. So the debt, which is now about six times the money taken in, 100% of GDP, and about $230,000 per American family will rise over 10 years to 7.5 the money taken in, 130% of GDP, and $425,000 per family. That will increase interest and principal payments on the debt from about $10 trillion, $1 trillion to interest, $9 trillion to principal, to about $18 trillion, of which $2 trillion is interest payments, which leads to either a big squeezing out and cutting off of spending and or unimaginable tax increases or a lot of printing and devaluing of money and pushing interest rates to unattractively low levels. This printing and devaluing is not good for those holding bonds as a storehold of wealth. And what's bad for bonds and the U.S. credit markets is bad for everyone because the U.S. Treasury market is the backbone of all capital markets, which are the backbones of our economic and social conditions. Unless this path is soon rectified to bring the budget deficit from roughly 7% of GDP to about 3% by making adjustments to spending, taxes, and interest rates, big, painful disruptions will likely occur. And I am here to tell you folks that they are not getting it down to 3% and that big, painful disruptions are absolutely going to occur. I don't have the crystal ball. I always think it happens in the bond market because that's usually where things start to blow up. And that usually is what forces people's hands. But, you know, maybe history doesn't rhyme or repeat itself in this sense. And maybe it's not the bond market. Maybe it's something else. But it's just not sustainable. So we are where we are. But to your point in the piece that you wrote, there's ways to profit from it. I mean, that just is what it is. You're going to get a higher gold price. Everything. Platinum just put in the biggest monthly move in four decades. So the volatility in the overall indices, because the economy isn't the stock market, right, has dropped to like a 4-month low. The markets, the overall indices, are as calm as they've been in at least 4 to 6 months. But the markets aren't the economy, folks. Just like, you know, gold isn't the same as having gold stocks, and every gold stock isn't the same. So knowing what you own is going to be really, really, really important here over the next several years. But all of these things are going to continue, you know, ripping. And we've talked about it. We've seen lithium companies up 30% the past week, 2 weeks of great, solid, strong moves. We've seen uranium moving. We see platinum, we see palladium, we see gold, we see silver closer to 37 now than 36. And again, looking a lot better even than gold right now. This is going to continue. This is not a complicated thesis. You're going to have to be a stock picker to an extent. And hopefully, you know, we can provide some guidance on that front. That's what we do at the end of the day. But, you know, I hate it. I hate the bill for what it does. But it's going to be good for my portfolio, ultimately, and for friends and family and subscribers. And so little Gerardo Del Real here from just outside of Austin, Texas, doesn't have the capital or the lobbyist or you know, any of the influence to be able to change any of these things. And apparently neither do, you know, a lot of members on the Republican side, which, you know, there were several that stood up and said, this is crazy. This is madness. And again, backroom deals were cut, you know, with people like Lisa Murkowski, who I've championed for many, many years. I've said repeatedly, I think she's one of, you know, those principled politicians. But at the end of the day, even on this, she cut a deal where what applies to everyone else won't apply to Alaska in exchange for the vote.
Yep.
And oh my God, Lisa, girl, like, again, after defending you on all the other things, and you know, she came out and she tried to mean mug a reporter and stare him down for what felt like 10 minutes. It doesn't change what you did, and it doesn't change why you did it. And I understand that, you know, your responsibility is to the citizens of Alaska, but these are the types of deals that make these types of votes possible. It wasn't because it was a big, beautiful bill. It's because people were bought off left and right on both sides to vote and get this thing passed. And so, yeah, that's my mini rant. I'll keep it
Shout
there.
Out to Rand Paul, who voted against it. Shout out to Mr. Tom Tillis, who not only voted against it, but will not stand for re-election because he will be primaried, which Trump has threatened for other people in his party who go against his wishes. So a lot more time to go in my mind till the fourth turning plays out if you can only get two folks to stand up, right?
Absolutely right. And then Thomas Massey was steadfast as well, but I want to make sure from Kentucky. And Trump threatened to primary him, saying, look, I could put any Republican there in a primary and they'll win by 25 points. I think he's underestimating Mr. Massey's influence in Kentucky. But again, I'm no politician and I'm no lobbyist. So I'll leave that for the fine folks of Kentucky to decide who they want to vote for in the next primary. But back to your point. Yeah, no, look, there's a lot to come here in this fourth turning, but let's get to the markets and figure out, you know, how we can make some money off of it. Speaking of making money off of it, I do want to get your take on gold and silver and where they are technically. I suspect it's going to be very similar to what we said last week. Okay, so let's just leave that there, folks. Everything actually looks pretty much the same from copper to uranium. You know, lithium is making a mini move. We'll see if that holds. Gold and silver are doing the exact same thing that they've been doing.
even the NASDAQ, even the S&P, S&P back to record highs, NASDAQ moving up, as I said. And some of those sort of bubbly sectors from 23 and 24, the AI is back a little bit. The space and the robots and the drones are back a little bit.
The quantum trade is back.
I need to talk to you about that, by the way. But yeah, and so everything is awesome. Really, the only things that are going down are dollar rates and volatility.
Let's talk about this private placement opportunity that you know, we've been working behind the scenes with some very influential and strategic investors to structure this deal that we're going to be offering here in this next week. And to the company and the CEO's credit, they've been very receptive about being willing to restructure the capital structure of the company to have it be a more effective structure. As straightforward and as like commonsensical as that should be, so many companies refuse to actually structure or restructure in a way that is more sustainable for the long term, much like our politicians and debt and that, you know. But he was amazing with it. And he said, listen, if these big influential strategic investors are willing to place significant lead orders and take the bulk of this and put their name behind it and willing to tie up their stock for 12 months, I'll restructure the capital structure of my company for you all. And, you know, where we go to bat for our subscribers is we replied with, okay, well, that can happen, but we would like to be able to offer it to our subscribers. And so I explain all of this because I want anyone that's thinking about, you know, our private placement service or accredited investor service and is wondering, well, what kind of due diligence goes on here? You know, so many groups tout private placements and all they're doing is crowdfunding something and they're not doing anything unique. This is something that's been going on in the background for weeks and getting done. And so I am excited to offer up a deal where the capital structure is great. Stock's going to be tied up for a year, so no one can sell it. The projects are in tier one jurisdictions. There's multiple projects. There's over $100 million in potential major company funding for exploration. And there's a couple of big shots on goal on projects that aren't joint ventured out yet or that other companies can't earn into. It's a lot of boxes to check for what's going to be a 3-cent financing, folks, at a very attractive valuation. So that is the kind of due diligence that we try to do for you all. And hopefully that gives you some insight as to how we do it.
Yep. Kudos to you, Gerardo. You turned this rock over and found it and brought it to our group. And I've since done a bit more diligence. Let me start with private placements, right? We pound the table on these all the time. We've had a lot of success in the past 10 years with private placements and even more success in I'd say the past year or so with the deals we've done in companies like Hannon and Kingsman, which I don't mind saying here because we've talked a lot about them in public webinars that we've done about private placements. Funding Hannon as low as 10 cents a share and having it run to over a dollar. That's a 10 bagger if you're keeping track, and also having financed it at other levels, 15 cents, 25 cents, et cetera, that also came with warrants. And the warrants are an important part as well, right? Because you get to have leverage to your deal without any additional risk. And I'm not saying there's no risk in these deals. They're certainly high risk, small juniors, but the warrant gives you additional upside without any risk for sure. So this is a copper deal. We've already talked about copper being over $5. So very fertile ground to go hunting in. It's an Australian deal, so I'll give a little bit of color on it. I had to educate myself. It's in the Macquarie Arc, which is an up-and-coming area of the mining exploration and mining in general sort of industry. Rick Rule is very bullish on it. If you're on his email list, you will have seen that he sent out a panel that he hosted last year with Brent Cook and a couple of CEOs from companies that operate in the area, including one company called Fleet, which is a space company that is doing some really interesting things with ambient noise technology that is linked to satellites to allow the geoscientists to see the data in real time and find the basement. The area in general is highly prospective and And fertile, as I said, one of the mines there, Cadia, is one of the reasons that Newmont took out Newcrest, right, to get access to this mine, which produces some 600,000 ounces of gold at an all-in sustaining cost. And I had to double check because I thought it was a mistake of $45 an ounce is what Newmont has on their website. Evolution is operating mines in the area. And there's also a takeover happening right now between Harmony Gold and a company called, I think, Mac Metals, M-A-C. Metals. So, $1 billion deals happening in the area, tier one mines being operated in the area. And now the juniors are starting to go in and explore with the partnership from these majors, because we're porphyry hunting here. So it's very expensive, right? The holes are deep. And now we're drilling blind because they don't outcrop at surface. We found all those. I was on a geologic call with Brent Cook and the company last week. Can you tell? So
we found all those except for the one we just found in the jungles of Peru, Nick. But I digress. Right.
in the Macquarie Arc, I'm talking about.
Yes, yes.
So this company that we'll be financing, as you said, has got 110. $1 million of potential asset level funding. They call it asset level partners. Here in North America, we'd call them a prospect generator. And that's just on a couple of its projects. It has some more that it's going to do some work on to bring in some partners. That's what the bulk of the funding is for. And then it has a project, as you said, that it's 100% owned, and they'll drill themselves this year. So lots of catalysts on all the others, on all these other projects, including the 100% owned one. You mentioned the stock being locked up for 12 months, which some people might not like, but I would say those are more people who are interested in the short term, potentially warrant flipping, et cetera. You mentioned how all these other private placement services are doing crowdfunding. It's either that or you're getting like the scraps of some brokered financing or something like that, right? These are non-brokered financings for the large part where our group is taking down large parts of them. Yep. So in this case, the two legends, one of whom I'm going to their conference next week, Mr. Rule, have agreed to lock up their shares for 12 months to let the company operate, to let that drills do their work on the partner funded projects and the 100% owned one. And it's being restructured, as you said. So you come out of it with a clear structure, which means fewer shares that allow the share price to potentially accelerate faster than it was if it was structured like an Aussie company. So that's that. I'll be writing a check, and we've already had a couple of new subscribers to Private Placement Intel join as a result of this deal that's coming, and it'll be out next week.
Excellent. No. Great summary. Excited for it. We will place a link to Private Placement Intel so that if you would like to go ahead and participate in that and future deals, the deal flow will continue, folks. You're able to do so. What else do you want to get off your chest, Mr. Hodge? I know we're going into 4th of July weekend, and as always, I want to be respectful of people's times, but there's a lot going on, man.
I mean, yeah, we had the thing in Idaho, just a couple of miles from me last weekend. I've been so busy that I haven't really paid much attention to that. There's a couple of bizarro banter topics I wanted to talk about, but first I did want to mention this YouTube AI and Google nuclear fusion deals. So, I was just saying that these frothy sectors are catching a bid again. The AIs, the drones, the quantum computing, as you said. Excuse me. And I saw this article. We obviously know AI is growing very fast and being used for different things, including video production, which I was talking to you about a couple of minutes ago. You can sit here, and if we were recording ourselves now, which we are, you can upload that to an AI video production interface, and it will then essentially clone you to make a deep fake, and you can have it say whatever you want, right? We used to see videos of these with, Osama bin Laden and Obama back in the day when deep fakes first started coming out. But now it's on your laptop, on your phone. You can get it with an app, right, which is pretty crazy. And then I was reading an article about YouTube, and the fastest growing YouTube channels are now either entirely AI generated content or partially AI generated content. And I went and I checked one out that has something like 30 million followers. And it's just like, AI anime chicks driving motorcycles or like in convertibles with like bras or bathing suits on, but they're not real people. It's AI generated, right? And it's like the fastest growing YouTube channel on YouTube. It's like the fastest growing channel on YouTube, and it's just crazy. So I don't know who wants to watch that. I'm certainly not watching YouTube AI scantily clad women. It just seems weird to me. Like, just go to Pornhub or whatever, right? Do what you want to do. But that part is crazy. But then here's where I want to talk about investments and tie some things together, right? We hear about this AI power demand, right? And the reason that all these companies are signing power purchase agreements. We've talked about this. Meta, Amazon, Oracle, Microsoft, bringing Three Mile Island back online, et cetera, going to foster demand for nuclear energy tech and obviously uranium, which we're heavily involved in. And then this week or last week, I don't remember exactly, but Google signed a power agreement for nuclear fusion energy, which, if you're keeping track, doesn't even exist yet. Correct. So they're signing power purchase agreements for electricity that we don't even really know how to produce yet. That's how desperate they are. And so, if we put the stuff on the sheet and really don't think about it ahead of time, I'm trying to tie it all together for you. Just think about that, right? 6 of the 10 fastest growing YouTube channels are powered by AI. Some data centers out, in Virginia or Washington or wherever they are, cranking out that content, burning electricity. You got to feed it with something, right? Which is the reason they're signing all these contracts. And then I just want to talk about crypto for a second, because, and this just occurred to me while I was writing my letter today, I was reading an update from a crypto company. They're getting into the energy management business. I think we might have mentioned this on the podcast some months ago, or maybe Chris has talked about it. But they're so energy intensive that they can help smooth out the grid during times of high demand. And so some of this stuff can seem very futuristic and esoteric and hard to figure out how it relates to your real life. And maybe you don't want to watch an AI video that's not real to you, or you can't hold it in your hand. But utilities are real businesses, and nuclear is real businesses, and crypto mining is real businesses. And if we're going to have this ascent of AI, which I'm getting more and more convinced by the day, right? I think there's even been some reports this week from CEOs saying how many jobs that it truly was going to disrupt. Sure. Then there are other ways to invest in it. Just like we were talking about the dollar and how to capitalize on that, right? If AI is going to disrupt humanity and labor, then there's ways to profit from it and ways that you can tie it all together, hopefully, like I just did, with some semblance of sense.
My next joke is going to offend some people, but speaking of things that aren't real, can we talk about Leo Thomas and the situation there? Because in this situation, I think it was the right thing to do, right? I think they acknowledge that, and I'll respect her wanting to identify however she wants to identify.
That's correct.
Right? Absolutely. 100%. However, we have to be honest about the fact that there's just a natural unfair advantage that was apparent, right, to anybody that was paying any kind of attention, right? So while on the one hand, absolutely respect her right to identify exactly how she wants to identify, 100%. Also 100%, this to me seems like a common sense decision where common sense failed years before, right? The common sense should have happened initially, where we should have said, we can create a different league, we can create a different, whatever. But no, you can't compete in a woman's sport with, biological advantages that a male would have. And so I actually agree, on this. And we haven't chatted about it, like we don't chat about most things until we get here. But how do you feel about that whole thing?
I mean, for the sports, it's very cut and dried for me. Like, I have two daughters. I don't want boys playing against my daughters. I don't want them competing against them for scholarships. I don't want them endangering them because of the difference in size and tenacity and ferociousness that's inherent with male testosterone and genes. And the country feels the same way. If you look at the polls, Pew Research says 66% of the country adults don't want... I'm going to get to the semantics in a second. They don't want those who were assigned male at birth playing against females. NBC poll says it's even higher than that, 75%. And so it's very common sense, as you say, Gerardo. And at the same time, I think the country is getting more nuanced about their beliefs, because that same Pew poll said that, you know, over half, I think it was 56%, supported protections for transgender folks in the workplace, anti-discrimination stuff,
absolutely,
all that stuff, right? Of
absolutely
course. You can get a job, but you can't compete against someone in sports. And so now here's the semantic part of it, right? We're still talking about the assigning of genders at birth, right? And this is the part that makes me crazy, because we have to talk about Orwell again. Like, the reason we didn't have the common sense approach 10 years ago was because of the definitions that we use and sort of the woke spectrum of the political gamut, right? It became taboo. You had to be accepting and empathetic. We kept adding additional letters to the LGBT, et cetera. I don't have to rehash this. Clearly, 75% of the country feels the same way. And you don't assign a gender at birth. You're born either male or female. We've got to get the terms, the semantic, and the language correct. This is not debatable, right? And I'm not coming at this from a bigoted standpoint, man.
Like, No.
I'm early on libertarian, early on very accepting of different cultures, and certainly I am a fan of liberty and individualism and you choosing, you know, whatever you want to do in your sexual life, et cetera. But where I do start to get bent out of shape is when you start telling me that 2 + 2 doesn't equal 4, right? And this is, again, back to Orwell in 1984, a central theme in the book. The party says that 2 + 2 = 5 in the book. And the main character says that true freedom is being able to say that 2 + 2 = 4.
Right.
True freedom is being able to say that males have a penis and boys have a vagina. It was in Kindergarten Cop, man. That's like Bible, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that hard, man. And so even the Pew language in the poll is like, do you support those who were assigned male at birth? It's like, no. Do you support males playing against females? That's the language you have to use. And the problem, and it spills over into other areas of government and politics and policy and language, when we use these terms to get what we want instead of facts and logic. So that's it. That's how I feel about it. And I think for me, like, logic is a big thing. Like, I like to like look at things and say A to B to C. But, you know, if I'm at the city council, where I was earlier this week, and I know that 4 or 5 of the 6 or 7 representatives up there think that gender is assigned at birth, how do we have a logical conversation about anything else if we can't accept penis and vagina? I mean, because you don't know like where the logic is.
Yeah.
It's obfuscated, right? Especially. And now this is just going to be my rant. So sorry, I'm going to go right into to will of the people. Right.
Yep.
So here in Washington State, I've ranted about this before. We had no income tax. The government tried to pass. Well, they did pass a capital gains tax. It went to the state Supreme Court and they said, oh, no, that's not an income tax. That's an excise tax. That's not a penis. That's an assigned gender. Like, what? OK. And then so more recently, we had this vote here in Spokane where 73% of the people said we wanted homelessness criminalized. You are not allowed to sit and lie on the sidewalk. That, too, got struck down by the state Supreme Court because of semantic reasons. It's administrative, not legislative. And so it overstepped the bounds of what a citizen vote can achieve. So it gets kicked back to the city council. There's a gentleman on the city council who said, great, I propose a bill exactly the same as what the people voted for, and then it'll become legislation and it's all good, right? Do you think they passed that bill that was exactly the same as what the people voted for? No, they did not pass that bill, which is what the people wanted. They reintroduce a bastardized bill that changes the language to where it's not sit and lie. It's if you're knowingly obstructing the sidewalk. And so how do you know if someone is knowingly doing it or if the sidewalk is not entirely obstructed? Maybe you'll assign them a grace period to stay on the sidewalk instead of criminalizing it and giving them their thing immediately, right? Despite 75% of the people wanting it. And so Last week, they tried to sneak one in that was really loose. City council went until 1 a.m, ended up deferring until this week, at which point I signed up to speak as well, as did like 80 other people, man. Like 80 people spoke on this bill. And I bet it was, I mean, it's what the statistics say. It was 75% in favor of criminalizing homelessness and probably 25% of the people saying, no, we got to be more empathetic, this, that, and the other thing. And sure enough, what do? They passed the watered down bill. They defanged it. They did not pass what the people wanted. They hid behind semantics. And many of the things in the bill are going to be administratively decided, which means the mayor gets to do whatever she wants, which will be to give them a notice period and let them stay on the sidewalks. And so that's it. That's my rant. I went and said my piece. I told them that the bill was more popular than any single person that was up there. It had 75% support. None of them got over 55% support. I told them that we're not asking them to find beds for these people. We're not asking for them to solve homelessness. All the people voted for was to criminalize homelessness and get them off the sidewalk. I got gaveled, by the way. But then I got some fist bumps as I went back to my seat and I had some business owners come up to me. There was, you know, lots of downtown business owners and the Downtown Business Coalition, all these groups, right, as small as they may be in Spokane. But of course they don't want it, man. Like,
yeah.
And here's the last thing, and then I'll shut up. We know they can do it. Because here in Spokane last weekend, we had Hoop Fest, which is the largest 3-on-3 basketball tournament in the world. I wasn't the only one who noticed this. Many other people, as they testified, said this. Do you think there were any homeless in downtown? Yeah,
of course not.
For Hoop Fest?
Of course not.
You think they moved them off the sidewalk and got them the fuck out?
Yeah.
Yeah. You think they were back on Monday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, you can be for criminalizing homelessness and be empathetic and caring and want 100%. Real solutions for people that have real displacement and real mental health challenges. Those two things are not exclusive. So for someone's counter argument to you wanting safe conditions in downtown to be, you need to be more empathetic, again, conflates the issue. It is not lack of empathy to want safe neighborhoods for people and to want real solutions, as in mental health help, as in proactive solutions to mitigate the significant contributing factors that tend to lead to homelessness, right? The drug use, the mental health issues that, you know, happen, the lack of a social support system, all of those things can be addressed empathetically. But to just use the argument that because Nick Hodge wants to criminalize homelessness, that he is not empathetic, It's a garbage, nonsensical argument, folks. And, you know, and that's where we get in trouble in this society sometimes, is, you know, you can confuse one thing for the other. You can confuse, I don't think Leo Thomas should be able to play in a sport where girls were born girls if she wasn't born a girl. And also, also she shouldn't be discriminated against in any work setting or in any social setting. And she should be allowed to identify exactly how she wants to. But we could do both. Both things can be 100% true, folks. And I think, again, more and more we're getting to a place where, at least with people behind, you know, an email or a keyboard, we don't want to have honest conversations. We just want to be right all the time. And sometimes it's right to say, you know, this is uncomfortable, but this is how this should be. And also, can we find a way to provide real solutions to this issue that is a real problem?
100%. Very well said. Three things, and then I'll shut my mouth and we can talk about stocks. One is that they had made up their mind, right? They knew how they were going to vote. The testimony did not matter. You could tell. Eye rolling from the city council, scrolling on the phone, which some people admonished them for. So we knew how they were going to vote. Two, on the services point, agree. You can be empathetic. You can offer them services. We might even have some data on that. So let me tell you about that. We did a study in March where we stopped over, I think it was over 110 or over 160 people. It won't matter because I'll talk in percentages. And they offered them services. It was like a 1-month study. Less than 10% took the services. And so at that point, what do you do when you're out there offering the services and people aren't taking them? They're staying on the sidewalk, right? Like, offering services isn't going to do anything. And then the last point comes from the gentleman who reintroduced the bill as the citizens want it. This guy, he deserves an award, man. He gave them the rant of rants at the end before they did the vote, because he knew how they were going to vote. And he said, imagine that you're hungry and you go to the restaurant and you order a hamburger and fries. And the waiter brings out a hot dog and hash browns and says, "Here's your hamburger and fries." And you say, "Sir, but I ordered a hamburger and French fries." And the waiter says, "Oh, that is a hamburger and French fries." And you say, "No, I know what a hamburger and French fries is. This is a hot dog and hash browns." And the waiter says, "You're going to love this hamburger and French fries, better than any hamburger and French fries you could have ever imagined or voted for. It's better. We didn't change any of the recipe. Like, you're going to love this hamburger and French fries," right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That's again, back to your 1984 point. We're kind of there, right? Let's get to me, and of course, right, we think it's going to be a short one. It never is, but let's get to the premium portion of this podcast. And folks, I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 324th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everyone. Take care. Happy 4th out there, guys and gals.
See ya.